Hi, and welcome back to the Beauty of Conflict podcast. We know you're busy, and we want to make it easy for you to understand how conflict may likely be showing up in a way that's impacting your team negatively. We've recorded the first three chapters of our book for you to listen to for free. Get your free audio sample at thriveinc.com/free sample. That's thriveinc.com/freesample. Hi, this is Chris Marie Campbell. And today we have a special guest with us, Dr. Alexandra Polizzi, who goes by Dr. Al. She's a former HR executive who founded Verdant Consulting, an award-winning company offering workplace mental health and psychological health and safety solutions to help organizations thrive. I like that thrive in there, since we're thrive. Through their global network of affiliates, Verdant provides organizations with the tools and resources they need to create healthy and resilient workplaces for today and tomorrow. Welcome, Dr. Al.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yes. And where do you hail from?
I currently reside outside of Boston, right in between Boston and Providence.
Excellent. And tell our listeners how you even got interested in this, because you were an HR executive. And so share your origin story, as I like to say.
Absolutely. So I have spent 20 years as an HR executive, as you mentioned. I had been on the front lines of seeing employees and leaders on their best and worst days. And I have seen consistently that we have a lot of suffering happening in the workplace. I personally, in 2021, experienced burnout and did not realize how bad my mental health was until I found out that my mother and my husband were meeting about my mental health without me. And so that was a wake-up call for me to do something differently. And so I started looking for and just Googled executive burnout recovery. What I found was a lot of things I really couldn't take very seriously. They were not based on science. And they also didn't help me understand skills, though it helped me just do things differently in a more effective way. So I started researching this topic. I'm an academic at heart. You mentioned the doctorate. And so I wanted to know, what does the science show? And what I saw very quickly, hidden in what I call the miasma of academia, were decades of research on workplace health and what makes teams thrive, what helps leaders thrive, what helps organizations drive innovation and creativity and better profit, to be honest. And all of it came down to psychological health and safety and simple tactics that people could employ that would help them navigate work challenges better. The other thing that I uncovered was how prevalent these self-destructive behaviors were. Things like self-criticism, imposter syndrome, loneliness. These are just tickets to entry in being a leader in an organization. I had never in my 20 plus years of experience heard us ever talk to leaders about taking care of themselves. And yet what I now know is the World Health Organization lists being responsible for other people as a threat to our mental health. And so we need to bolster ourselves so that we can navigate that in a healthy way. And so with that information, I'm an educator. I love to help people learn new skills. And so I took what I learned, I could put it into learning and a different program so that organizations can implement them. And now, almost 3 years later, we have an affiliate group of 100 folks around the globe who've certified on our programs. I'm the global liaison for psychological health and safety for ISO, and I help organizations make a difference in the lives of their employees by creating healthy and safe workplaces.
Oh, wow. I just really appreciate how you, your own process with your peeps talking about you. Oh my gosh, I've got to do something differently. And even when you dug into it, all the research that you found about psychological health and safety, like decades of research. And just when you said being responsible for other people is a threat to our own, what do you say, mental health,
mental right? Health. Yeah, absolutely. That shift to go from thinking that when I talk about mental health, people often think mental illness. No, That's like thinking that physical health is only physical illness. We are perfectly fine talking about how we're taking care of our bodies. We also have to take care of our minds. We all have mental health. And there are well-documented, proven, peer-reviewed studies that show specific hazards that can increase the damage and harm to our mental health, the same as physical hazards that exist in the workplace. In fact, when ISO implemented their occupational health and safety guidelines back in the 90s, it included psychological health and safety. We just never paid attention.
Yeah. So
until 2021, when they published the ISO 45003, which covers psychological health and safety, that we actually started to have a framework for how we can address this and prevent it within our businesses.
Is that something you could give the high level view of the framework of how to help prevent? And I really like what you're saying. Physical health is mental health as physical illness is to mental illness. Very different. We exercise to keep up our physical. We eat right. There's lots of things we do, yoga, whatever it is, to keep up our physical health.
But we have no problem ignoring our mental health or just quote unquote sucking it up or somehow pretending like we can shut it off.
Yeah.
When we are actually feeling creatures who also think.
Yeah.
For 200,000 years, emotions and stress, that we evolved for that to keep us alive. And now we have to know how to navigate that in a different context. But from a high level, there are a ton of psychosocial hazards, what are called psychosocial hazards. Those are the things that we know can accelerate burnout and create hazards for our mental health. And the World Health Organization lists about 12 in their workplace global guidelines, which I highly recommend. It's free and has a very simple framework, which of course we help organizations implement. But I'm a simple girl who likes to make things easy to understand. So I've broken it into three categories. One is the structures and systems and how we work. So things like role clarity, communication, over-indexing on change. And I'm going to throw another one in there, workload. Okay. All of those, when not handled properly, can increase stress, anxiety, depression, and other mental health issues within the workplace. So that's one, structures and systems. Two is environment, the external environment or the internal environment in which we work. So if I work in high temperature spaces, if I work in places that put me in physical danger, I'm at threat for secondary trauma, as an example. But there's also considering the external factors that impact the mental health of our employees as they show up to work. Let's look at what's happening right now in the Middle East. We have many people coming to work who are stressed, distracted, etc. Are we responsible as employers for fixing that for them? Absolutely not. But we can't pretend like that's something that they can shut off. Rather, what we need to do is have systems and tools, resources in place where we can navigate that by understanding that these are people just being human. So that's the environmental. And then there's the expectation of behavior. This is where things like psychological safety comes in. These are the non-toxic behaviors that we need to put in place. Things like curiosity, compassion, being able to ask questions, not being afraid of making mistakes. One of the problems is we go to that part, we ignore all the other pieces, and I can have an incredibly toxic workplace where we're all super, we feel like we can make mistakes, but if I don't have both of those pieces in place, I actually am not going to be able to make much progress. And so the WHO guideline, as an example, starts with address those first two pieces first, and then equip leaders and teams with the skills and capabilities to navigate stressors in a healthy and productive way.
I like it. Just, I'm going to repeat back and you're going to fill in some gaps because I was madly writing, but I didn't get it all. So the three main elements that you broke them down for the framework.
Now, I call it C. I like acronyms. C. Yeah.
Oh, S-E-E. So structures and systems. And you said role clarity, communications, workload. What were some other, there were a few other things.
Oh, it's having the right proper systems and tools to do your job. When I don't have the resources to accomplish what I'm being asked to do,
yeah,
that increases, exactly.
You folks are seeing my hands, but they're going up over my head. Oh, but I don't know how to do that.
Overwhelm. And again, we get into this gaslight mindset of I shouldn't feel like that because it's just work. And the spoiler alert is that our brains don't know the difference. So our brains are doing what they were designed to do, which is to keep us safe and to protect us from harm. If I'm trying to do something I don't have the resources to accomplish, of course that's going to create stress for me. Is it guaranteed that it will? Maybe not, but it is definitely a hazard that we can proactively prevent in our workplaces.
Absolutely. And then, so that's the S. Going on to the first E, environment, external and internal. And I think you bring up a very good point about the war that's happening in the Middle East. But that could also be if somebody's going through a divorce.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Absolutely. What are some internal environmental things that you bump into?
One of them is working remotely. And or high, but the some of them are very simple. High noise environments, extremes in temperature. Like I said, being exposed to dramatic and traumatic events and being exposed to secondary trauma. Those are all things that usually we put some strategies into place to address those proactively because we've been more aware of them. But if we think about them in a slightly different context, one of those that I like to really talk about, like I said, is leaders. Being a leader puts you in the hot seat and exposes you to things like loneliness, imposter syndrome, perfectionism. And there's been, again, decades and decades of research on the mental health and emotional weight of being responsible for other people. And while we should have leaders focus on the needs of their teams, they can't do that if they're not well. And that is a critical part of becoming a leader.
So the whole idea about leaders, and I think what's happening, I really appreciate what you're saying, the self-criticism, imposter syndrome, loneliness, perfectionism. And I think there's this belief, I always think about put your own oxygen mask on first, but people don't even know what it is to put on my own oxygen, how to feel my feelings, how to actually recognize that I am a human being. And I loved when you said, because I believe it too, we're feeling creatures that also think, but we like to, I'm going to cut off my feelings. And it's like smushing a beach ball underwater.
Or just allowing some feelings, so anger, that's cool. We want parts of the brain, but not all of it. Like just that's not real. None of that is real. None of the data shows that's a thing. In fact, all of that is highly destructive. It decreases innovation. It decreases profit. It puts your business at risk. It decreases teamwork, et cetera, et cetera. And in a world where, according to Gallup, 70% of our leaders are rated very poorly, what we're doing isn't working. And so we need to do something different. The other thing is our own Surgeon General a year ago published their framework for workplace mental health and well-being. And they quoted that 84% of the people that they surveyed said they had experienced at least one mental health issue as a result of work. So we know that all of us know work impacts our mental health. We know it. But we don't want to talk about it.
Yeah. I think it's that vulnerability. Oh, I'm going to seem as weak because I'm feeling. And yeah. And that's one of the things we preach is, not preach, but we work with people to, hey, it's vulnerable. And I was coaching an executive yesterday whose daughter, he had to find a way out of Israel because she was on a gap year. So
go.
I was crying. So I so appreciated his willingness to process what he was feeling. I think so much... For me, at least, I grew up with an alcoholic. It wasn't safe to don't talk, don't trust, don't feel. So I did not learn the skills of feeling emotions.
Most of us never learned that. None of us, I like to say, none of us have really been taught how to human. And we haven't. We don't understand how our brains really work. We really haven't been taught these basic skills of like mindfulness or self. The concept of self-compassion instead of self-criticism, that is a radical concept and yet so obvious. So do I want to continue to eat junk food that's going to destroy my body? Or do I want to try to take care of it and take care of myself? It's like we want to beat ourselves up and somehow think that's going to make us stronger. When in fact, that never works. Never works.
It's such a habit in our brains, though. Exactly. Like I just even discovered Kristen Neff's book on self-compassion, her research on mindfulness, yes, and self-compassion. And it's so different. Oh, now I have this visual of somebody putting putting my arm around myself and saying, you know what? You're doing just fine.
You're going to be okay.
Yeah. You're gonna, no matter what happens, you're going to be okay. That is such a different message than, oh my God, you've got to do it faster, better. You can't make a mistake, but you don't really know how to do it, but you got to figure it out.
Yeah, absolutely. With that, I get two pieces of feedback when I share this concept. One is, if I'm nice to myself, then I'll lose my edge.
Yes, I know.
I said that the first time someone suggested it to me as well. So guilty as charged.
Right.
The other one is, the simple act of self-reflection, just checking in with yourself, has been shown. There was one study where they did it for 15 minutes a day, and after 10 days, they had a 23% improvement in their overall well-being.
Wow.
That's just going, hey, Chris Marie, how you feeling? What's going on?
Yeah.
What are you excited about? What are you sad about? Whatever. When I make this suggestion, the number one piece of feedback I get is, I don't listen to myself because I'm afraid of what I might hear.
Oh my gosh.
I think that's true with a lot of us.
Is like that away from what's actually happening inside.
And if you can't be your own best friend, how on earth are you going to be able to support other people? You just can't, you don't have it.
No. I know that that is so true, because when I'm beating myself up, it's coming out. Like Susan is getting, and that's actually become a signal. Oh, if I'm criticizing her, I'm doing that. I'm upset. I'm beating myself up. I've got to figure that piece out.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's that self-awareness to go, I know this about myself. And so one of the easiest things you can do is just know, what is my stress response? What are my own biases? Not just about others, but about myself. What are those stories I tell myself, those unhelpful thoughts, et cetera? And again, where would we have learned this? Where would that have come up? I don't know where that would have come up. So what I say is, let's have the workplaces which can financially benefit from us being healthy, help us have those skills.
A simple way is just to, on a daily basis, add 15 minutes of self-reflection and that's just, it can be in writing or just pondering, daydreaming. What am I feeling? What am I thinking? What are my sensations?
What are you thinking about when you brush your teeth? Like there's 4 minutes.
Right.
You're doing it at least twice a day. And find those small moments, find those triggers. For me, I have put a picture of myself, my kindergarten school picture, right by my desk. And so I check in on how.
Got my little girl.
My little girl.
Yeah.
Well, you showed me yours. I'll show you mine. So my grandmother really recently passed away. And so this is one of the things that I grabbed from her. So yeah, look at that smile. I know. So how are you doing? And the other thing, I also use that. You know that space while you're waiting for someone to join a Zoom call? Just that moment, that's my check-in moment. I use that moment as soon as I see waiting for host, I think, okay, it reminds me of the host of me and like, how am I doing? And so just finding those little triggers, it doesn't have to be 15 solid minutes. It can just be those spots in the day when you check in. Am I perfect at it? Absolutely not. It's a thing I know I can do that's relatively easy.
I love that. And even seeing the host of me as a trigger. And it's the same true with mindful. That's a version of mindfulness, basically. Like what's happening inside me right now? And even feeling like the chair, because I'm so often out here managing versus, wait a minute, this chair is soft. It's supporting me. Simple things to help me come back. Yeah. Nice, easy tool. Okay, the third E, or the second E for C, S-E-E, is expectation of behavior. And
the third one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's one that we tend to focus on, curiosity and compassion. Is that what you're saying? That most people do that, but they don't take care of the structures and the internal, external?
We tend to want to skip all the parts that are actually the less messy parts, which is, the ways we work and where we work, are those working for us or against us? And we also tend to dismiss it. If I can't just erase it, then we go, there's nothing I can do about that. So we'll just have to suck it up. But there's a whole hierarchy of ways in which you can diminish risk. If you think about this in the same way you do physical hazards, think about it exactly the same way, then you can come up with, how do I mitigate the risk? How high is that hazard in my organization, et cetera? And so it's the expectations of behavior. That's where we really get into the stuff we've just been talking about, which is teaching people how to human and setting up what psychological safety is, which is the ability to have open discussion, have open debate, to create and communicate, opportunities to communicate. In fact, there's research around creating what they call a culture of courage. and specific things you can do to invest in that bank, so to speak. Again, my purpose here is to be more proactive in how we think about creating these healthy workplaces versus waiting until crisis and sending everyone to EAP. Doing that is the equivalent of never seeing your doctor until you're in the midst of a heart attack. So how about if we don't just focus on crisis and rather help create healthy workplaces for the humans who are here?
I love that. And you were saying these three, you created this framework to simplify the World Health Organization guidelines. It has 12 of them, right?
There's 12, and then there's a whole laundry list, different ways you can slice and dice it within the ISO 45003 as well. But this just helps to get, for me, it just is logical. It's the ways we work and the where we work, and then there's the how we work together. So it's just very simple and we have a way to assess and audit companies against that because, believe it or not, there are countries who have already made this a requirement for workplaces. Wow. Canada and Australia have had national requirements for having psychologically healthy workplaces since 2007. And Mexico has had the same requirements since 2018. In fact, they do a biannual audit of organizations against these psychosocial hazards. But yeah, we have in the US, we do not have that yet. Massachusetts, we actually have a bill right now in front of the legislature called the Workplace Psychological Safety Act, which would put our Commonwealth as the first part of the US that has enacted that if we are able to do, but this is coming.
I love it that it's, so you're very primed to support people to help build these pieces in.
Yeah, for me, one, it's how businesses are successful anyway. All the data shows if you want to have a successful business, how about if you take care of your biggest investment, which are your humans, and you'll get better outcomes just exponentially. And do you want to be reactive to this or do you want to be in the forefront? It just depends on what you want your brand to be. And if you're a company that really believes in having a healthy and safe workplace, then this just, it's been there since 1996. And why don't we go ahead and do something about it? The other thing is that some of the industries that have struggled the most with suicide are the industries that could benefit and focus on health and safety. So construction, oil and gas, and agriculture and auto repair are industries with the highest incident of death by suicide. And those are all areas where you are in physical risk, right? So if we can put this in place as part of your health and safety strategy as well, now you're really looking at your organization in a more mature and human-centric way.
Surprised. I really appreciate knowing the industries. I'm surprised technology isn't in there because there's often a lot of run in this direction and then run in that direction. So the structures and systems are
very unhealthy.
Yeah. And I would think the bigger tech like Microsoft, Google, they would be all over this, implementing this sort of stuff. But because, and I think sometimes those sorts of environments can be quite toxic, that could really use this and be really helped in my opinion.
Yeah. So what's interesting on this, I've been doing this for a little while, is that it's not industry specific where I see the interest. It's really about the, like I said, the level of maturity of the executive team. So if the executive team understands that they have humans and that they want to, and they can just see that they're not machines, that's how we have the conversation. And usually how I start it is I ask one question, which is, tell me when you've done your best work. The answer is never, I was promoted, I had money, someone yelled at me all the time. It's always about how they felt. I felt valued. I felt supported. My boss had my back. I knew what I was going to be. I was confident about what I was being held accountable for. By the way, all four of those are psychosocial hazards.
Wow.
It's pretty simple stuff, really.
Yeah. But slowing down, I think what you're putting is a really good point. It's the maturity level of the executive team, because I think a lot of people are living on stress. They think that's normal. This is just what we have to do. And we're going this way, that way. And so I really appreciate that. And tell me when you've done your best work. I like what you're saying. I know what I'm doing. I'm held accountable. I feel supported, valued.
It writes itself.
It does. Yeah.
And my answer is, let's have everybody do their best work as many days as possible.
And the company will be more profitable.
And the math is simple.
I love it. Any other last tips, Dr. Al, you'd like to leave our listeners with before we wrap up?
Here's what I would say is that, and I'm working actually on building a maturity model right now, because a lot of these concepts sound simple, but they also might sound bigger than people can probably feel like they can tackle right away. And so if I can cheat and get two things in.
Sure.
One is be realistic about where your organization is. If this is something that you are passionate about, work with partners. You don't have to be alone, but be realistic about where you're starting from. The maturity model we're building actually starts from an anti point of view. Most maturity models start with, I don't know, but there are organizations where they are actively being mentally abusive, right? And so if you're starting from that place, you're not going to get all the way to a certified psychologically safe workplace, right? But what can you do? What change can you make? And that takes me to my second piece. Be kind to yourself and understand and accept you can't control other people's inability to follow the logical steps. You can make the business case all day long, but if people want to hide or not connect the dots or not follow your logic, that's not on you. That doesn't mean that you have failed. That means you have done your best. So practice that self-kindness. If you're going to be an advocate for this, make sure that you take care of yourself as well.
I really love what you're saying. One, the first point that if you're in a mentally abusive, emotionally abusive, whatever it is, I've been in organizations and I've seen that. Don't expect to go, whoop, you're going to just progress, not perfection. And then take care of your own, because this is a marathon. It's not a sprint. Mm-hmm. So learning how to be kind and self-compassionate and surrender, basically, what other people are doing. I think the maturity piece, like I see my own growth over the last however many years. You continue to learn what you don't. Oh, wow. I didn't even realize that. Like the expansion of my own, it's really my brain maturing. It mm-hmm. is. I really appreciate that you're creating a maturation model, a maturity mm-hmm. model. And alongside, I think, Dr. Al, you should have an assessment so people could start to. Yeah.
That's part of the model, right? Where okay, am I?
Exactly.
Where am I? So I can set, I've seen too many people get frustrated when it doesn't move fast enough. It doesn't meet their expectations. You have to meet companies where they are. And that includes determining if there is enough of an alignment with your values. That's the company you want to stay with. But yeah. You may say, yes, I believe in our mission. I believe we can get there. And now I'm going to pick the things that will help us move forward.
Yeah. Pick the few and move forward. Mm-hmm. Okay. How can our listeners learn more about you, connect to you?
We have a website, verdantconsulting.net. I love making new friends on LinkedIn. So I'm Alessandra Polizzi. I'm also on TikTok as Dr. Al Polizzi or your HR big sister. And I'm currently doing a series on psychosocial hazards, workplace mental health. This is pretty much all I talk about. And yeah, I think those are the big ones. So LinkedIn, TikTok, and then of course my website.
Excellent. And we will put in the show notes links to those things for you. And maybe even some of the WHO, if that's an easy link for
it
us.
It is. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. We'll put that in there so people can dig around in there. Thank you. This is such a relevant topic. And I really love that it was, especially because it was born out of your own burnout process that you wanted to help shift the whole system. So that's really neat.
That's my goal, changing the world.
One person at a time or one company at a time. Thank you. Take care.
Thank you. All right. Take care. Bye-bye.
Well, thanks for joining us. We hope you found today's episode valuable. If you want to take some of what you've learned on today's episode to the next level, check out our new step-by-step, easy-to-use team kit to get your team from avoiding conflict to discovering the beauty in conflict.
Go to www.thriveinc.com/teamkit to learn more. That's www.thriveinc.com/teamkit.